right? We're from Cork, and what's happening in Dublin? Nothing. Don't give it. They don't give a shite about it here, down here.
Focus on the game. Don't hide behind your cars or your tattoos or your girlfriends or your agents. Play the game.
Be careful the cat. No say the cat is in the sack when you have not the cat in the sack.
The great football, the Liam Brady's, the Ronnie Whelan's, the David O'Leary's. This is a great football and country produced players and go out and play that rubbish. Yeah.
Right, delighted to be joined by Graham Cummins now. Graham, as you know, of course, has been presenting the Footballers Live podcast for the Irish Examiner in recent months. But things have changed for you since we talked to you last, Graham. Firstly, you've had young Clodagh has arrived.
I have, but there's a lot of change. That's a big change in your life, to be fair. Yeah. I used to think playing football for 90 minutes is a tough job until a child comes along the way and then it gets a lot tougher. And I appreciate parents a lot more anyway. That's all I'd say. I would. Any mother that stays at home and minds a child is a wonder woman, is what I would say to them. And only parents will understand that as well. But loads have changed.
The bigger, probably, that's probably a bigger change than the move from one end of the field to the other. But you were announced with Cork City as a centre-half now. So, how's that come about?
Well, to be fair, when the league kind of finished up, I think I've been quoted on numerous occasions thinking it would never come back. So in my mindset, it was a bit of let's try and get a job, and I just kept training away. But I was doing all the wrong training in terms of if I want to come back playing soccer, doing half marathons, all that kind of way. And in my head, I was just actively looking for a job. Of course, then soccer players won't realise you look for a job and everyone keeps going, where's your experience? Where's your experience? Sure, I didn't have really much of an option. Hand in hand, if I'd been offered a job, full-time stability, especially with a family, I would have been happy to call it a day with football. But things haven't gone that way, and I'm back on the pitch now. And some people are probably cursing me for being back. They would have been happy to see me go, but they'll just have to sit through it a bit more. But in terms of the Cork move, listen, it was just a case of Waterford delayed things, obviously, going back. They were probably the last team back training, and then the manager left during it, and we hadn't a clue, to be honest, what was going on. There was total lack of communication, I think, between the owners and the players. The management tried to stay involved, but there's only so much you can do. You can't keep talking to lads like for managers and keep saying, I have no idea what's going on, because I can't speak to them myself. And I think that's probably why Rennie ended up leaving. And then when it did come to return it to training, I spoke to Fran. He was very keen for me to stay. I was kind of keen to stay myself. And then couldn't get really much clarity off the owners regarding the new manager, even though they kind of knew who was coming in place. I wanted to speak to him. But then I got a surprising phone call off Alan Bennett. It said, Gaffer now would be interested in, yeah, what you think. Obviously, they wanted to sign me as a striker at the start, and it wasn't something, it interested me because it was on my doorstep, and it's obviously Cork's my hometown club, but it was a case of, again, going back in my ward saying, Jesus, I hate playing up front that kind of way. And I think it came to, like, I just literally rang up the gaffer Neil Fenn again and just said, look, I think I have to sign as a centre-half, or I don't think I can come on board. No, I gave the option as well. Obviously, I can play up front as well, but I think you appreciate more, like, towards the end of your career for me, you know, like I said, it's about, like, actually going on a pitch and enjoying it. I think I've actually enjoyed going in training, which I hate training. Like, I'm a terrible trainer anyway, as it is. But I've enjoyed it. Like, I only trained with Cork on a Friday last week and then played half a game against Wexford Utes. And literally, like, when I said, because my training was so bad, it's ridiculous how leggy I was and everything after just going into that one short, sharp session. And it'll take maybe a week or 10 days to get properly back into it. I think with my age anyway, you're a bit of a slow goer, like, you know, an old car, like, if you don't drive it for a while, you need to keep driving a car, like, you know,
you're running for a while.
Yeah. It'll take a while. Like, it just needs to be brought to the mechanics, like, and we'll be flying again.
Yeah. You've been kind of saying it for a while to us that you were fed up with playing up front, and you probably didn't want to say it really publicly a good bit before you actually moved to centre back with Waterford, because obviously you want to keep your options open and all that. Like, how far back in your career did you kind of wish you were the other side of the other end of the pitch?
If like, I've made a good career, I would like to think, not made a brilliant career, I've not made enough money that I can even retire for a year, you know, that kind of way. Where some footballers can retire when they're finished the rest of their lives. But I've made a decent career, and in that sense, I kind of think, yeah, I've done well as a striker and I've made a good career. But I always, when I used to play, I said, I wonder, could I have actually been a better career if I'd stuck centre-half? And it's something that, obviously, I never did. I never tried to do. I actually can remember, if I said it, like, I pressed them when the manager tried to throw me out of the club one week, and then he was just throwing me in as a defender in training, just as a body, basically, like, and I think he got really impressed by me, and he was like, actually the best I've seen, yeah, that kind of way. And I asked him to play centre-half, but he said, I can't be spending, I think it's the time Preston bought me for like €100,000. He was like, could you imagine me after spending €100,000 on a striker playing him as a centre-half, then 6 months later, I can't just put that to the board. But it is definitely, like, it's actually a regret in my career. If it's probably my biggest regret that I never did it. And if I could go back in time, even though I've had a decent enough career, I would never have actually stepped up front.
Yeah, I sure. I mean, you did start as a centre-half initially, did you?
Yeah.
I mean, you were thrown up front and got too many goals initially. Like, that was your mistake, wasn't it?
That's it. I blame Stephen Henderson for that. Yeah. Like, you know, he threw me up front and he promised me with Waterford that we would end up signing a striker, but never materialised that way. But, like, I think just, like, anyone who plays football will realise, like, being as a centre-half, it's more about intelligence, reading the game. You're like, as people say, when your legs start going, you look at Rooney. I'm not saying I've got any footballing brain like Wayne Rooney does, but he's had to drop back from being up front, like, and he's in a centre kind of quarterback role now, in centre mid, where it's kind of more of a brain. And I think the more you go back, the more you need a brain for the game, not blistering pace. Listen, if I have someone standing next to me and they've got blistering pace, then happy days, like, that helps out. You probably can't have two snails in the back line either. And then that's kind of where I saw myself. I would always like to think I had a brain, and a bit like maybe Rooney when I was up front, I just would walk great, and maybe that's happened to my legs a bit. Like, but it's so bad. Like, you know, when people, like, with forward, you love playing up front because the best thing in football to do is score goals. There's no beating it. You can't replicate that feeling. I think even in life, it's very hard to top that. Like, the buzz you get out of hitting that net and having the crowd cheer, and you kind of go, that cheers for me. As a striker, you don't think about the team when you score. You're like, that's me. Like, that's your job. And I said it to lads, like, I mean, as a striker, you could win 10 games and you could not score in the 10. You'd be miserable. I'd be miserable if we won a game 3-0. I didn't score. We played a game years ago.
That kind of stuff, like, but every striker feels like that, even though you're not.
Yeah, they, like, if strikers are lying if they say they're happy to just be a team player and not score. It's, like, it's such a lie. Like, I mean, you look at, like, as bad as it is, as a striker, I would prefer to lose 4-1 and score than win 4-0, and that's the way it is. Because, like, I always say, football is a self-employed kind of game, and as a striker, you're only going to make a good living if you're scoring every week. No one's going to sign someone who goes, oh, but he walks hard, we'll give him a really good contract for walking hard. That doesn't materialise that way. You look at Patrick Bamford now for Leeds at the moment. Like, everyone says, oh, he does a great job for the team. Bielsa acknowledges him, but the amount of abuse he gets, and I watch him, he's got 14, 15 goals still. I know he misses a lot of chances, but the abuse strikers get are unbelievable. As I said to you, if you look at every team, fans are never happy with strikers. Pundits aren't happy with strikers. Every team, if you go through every team, what would they say in a transfer market every club needs? They'd always say they need a striker.
More goals.
And exactly. Like, I mean, I could score 20 goals, but people go, he still needs competition against him. And you're like, but I don't like, you know, when people say, like, you look at Harry Kane, though, and they always say that, and they go, oh, Kane would appreciate another striker coming in and sharing the load. Like, he wouldn't. He doesn't want competition coming in. He's comfortable at Spurs. He knows he can have 7 or 8 bad games. But, like, as I said, strikers are fans. Like, I do read forums and all that, and all you see is all the time is we could do with another striker, even though a striker could get 20 goals, and you're like, well, why can't you do with another right mid who only got 6 assists or something like that? But it's just, it's like, let's be honest, like, that's why strikers get paid the most, because it's the most pressurising position on the pitch. And I think even, like, I only played one game though with Waterford out of their 4 league games against Derry. I felt extremely hard and done by that I didn't actually start the season, because I'd done really well in pre-season. It's just the fact we signed 2 centre-backs in Reading 2 days before the season begun, and the manager said to me he couldn't play me with someone I didn't know he'd prefer to have 2 lads who actually played together. And then towards the end, he kind of like apologised to me, and not like in public as well, that like in front of the dressing room, that he should have played me. And it's something I appreciate. And then even when we beat Derry that night, my only start to centre back, it felt so much better. But just, it felt easy, you know, like sometimes you just, like you said, you just need to have, I think, more of a brain at centre back, and it just felt very comfortable and easy.
Well, you, in fairness, you've mentioned a few times in your podcast as well, when you're talking to guys, that confidence has been a bit of a factor, and lack of confidence has been a factor throughout your career. And like, up front isn't the place you want to be if your confidence is anyway lacking, really, is it? It's doubly difficult, especially if you miss the first chance. I mean, you always hear about the likes of Teddy Sheringham, who couldn't care less after he misses the first chance, would take the second one in exactly the same kind of way. Like, would you have found it easy to put behind you if you miss a chance
early? See, Jesus, it's tough, because sometimes I do feel sometimes you can look at missing a chance both ways. You can kind of look at it and say, I'm scared to get in for the next one because the crowd are going to absolutely batter me if I miss. And then in the other sense, I'm like, well, at least I'm getting a chance. If you're a striker and you're not getting a chance, there's something wrong. I always found, as a striker with confidence, what's hard is when you're expected to hold the ball up and 1 or 2 ricochet off you, and that breaks down. But it breaks down, it's not just you, it affects the whole team, because it breaks down everyone. It breaks down the play, all the midfielders make run. And then, like, if you miss a chance as a striker, you lack confidence in yourself. But if you're not holding up the ball, players start, your teammates start losing confidence in you, because they won't make runs off you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
If they're giving you 5 or 6 balls and you lose 4 or 5, they're just going, well, what is the point of me going when this fella can't hold the ball? And you would, like, people look at you then in different ways, and you think it's an easy thing. It's one of the hardest things to do in football as well, is actually just hold the ball up, because you've got 2 centre halves up against you. And strikers, and when I started playing, you've 2 lads, you, me and another fella, and would normally, like, it does help because it's half the battle. Like, I mean, you're coming off the pitch doing probably half the work, where nowadays you don't play with 2 strikers anymore. It's very rare, and you're running around like a headless chicken, and sometimes you've been asked to do a thankless job. And then, like you said, I think for me, like, your confidence, players do get confidence, but there's so much lows in football that it can go straight away, I think. I mean, I was even nervous going in. I remember with Waterford, I was nervous at the start, playing centre-back my first game, and it did take me 2 or 3 weeks to get comfortable again. And it was the same last week with Cork. I went in, and on the Saturday against Wexford, I was nervous, and I was thinking to myself, Jesus, you're 32 at this stage. You're playing Wexford, no disrespect to him, in a friendly out in Bishopstown in front of no one. You've played at Celtic Park, you've played at Ibrox, but yet this still makes you nervous. And I was like, you seriously have bad issues. Like, this is ridiculous. But it's a good thing. But I think it's a
good thing. It's a good thing, Graham. When the nerves go, you'll know it's time to probably pack it up.
Ah, well, Jesus, I thought it was time to pack it up 5 months ago. I just couldn't get a job, for God's sake. Anyone's listening now, and they've got work for me, I'll take a job in a few months there. I'll be able to contract again.
But come here, I think you made a good point there about the whole one man up front. I mean, they've ruined, as far as another member of the big man's union now, I think they've ruined the forward positions over the years in terms of for the big lad anyway. If you had two up there, obviously you share the work and you're not running the both channels all the time, and you can it's not as much of a pressure situation, and you can happily score one in six and everybody would be happy with you in the old
days. Yeah, well, you couldn't. But do you know what? I remember having this conversation when I was at St. Johnston. We played two up front, and it was very rare to play two up front. And I formed a good partnership with a fellow, Stephen McLean. He was intelligent. He would drop off. I would do all his donkey work running. But we spoke in the car when we played against other teams with two. I think we played Aberdeen once, and he was right. He said, the problem is now that teams cannot actually play 4-4-2 because when players are growing up now, they've never changed systems. When they talk about grassroots, everyone still plays what's the fashionable system at the time. Mm. I mean, maybe it should be a thing of grassroots you look at and go, maybe we should play 4-4-2 sometimes, 4-4-3 has to be played, because lads actually don't understand how to play in the two up front anymore. If you've come through the system now, you're probably wondering, I actually don't know how to make runs. Where, when, like, the benefit of playing up front by yourself is you don't have to worry about anyone else. You just run, you run, you run. Where when you're playing a two up front, again, which I think it actually involves more of a brain, because you can't just run somewhere because someone else might be in that space. And it's the case of like the great partnerships, York and Cole, Shearer and Sutton, like they literally knew where the other person was at all times. Where I think when you're up front by yourself, you can just run around like a headless chicken. It doesn't matter once you get in the box at the end of the day. But with two, you can't make the same near post run, you can't make the same back post run, you can't both drop in together. You can't just leave one fella fight for the ball all the time. And I think sometimes people don't understand it. And then if you play one up front, for me, you have to play ball. You can't just lump things up because it does come straight back. And that's obviously, it suits like teams. Like if you look at like the Liverpools of this world, the Manchester Cities, that's why they can play a small, nippy player up front, someone with a brain again, or someone who is intelligent, quick, because they pass the ball so much. And if you actually watch them, their strikers don't get involved in the game. Firmino's different because he drops so deep in. But like the best strikers in the world at the best clubs, they don't come alive until the ball's at the edge of the box. But in League of Ireland, that's not the case. Like you have to be everywhere. You have to be fighting for every ball.
Yeah,
I can remember watching Barcelona and you, Luis Suarez. I was at Celtic Park. They played Celtic, and he must stand offside 70% of the time. The ball's at the other end of the pitch. He's standing 20 yards behind the Celtic centre half, and I was just wondering, well, what is he doing? And he's so clever because he's just saving his energy because he doesn't want to be going back to field. He's just standing there going, eventually I'll have to run that way. So I may as well just wait here for the ball to come to me rather than do an extra 10, 20 yards going back. And it all depends, again, on what team you're in. I mean, like you said, the big centre-forward. Is there any left in the Premier League? I don't think so. The closest I could think to is you've got Troy Deeney. Harry Kane is actually, he would be an old-school centre-forward for me, Harry Kane.
Yeah, he would a bit, yeah.
There's no standout. I don't think Harry Kane, he's a goal scorer, but he's not. I wouldn't say quick. He's just good at everything. And that's the way you kind of look at an old-school centre-forward.
It's funny that McGoldrick is a kind of an in-betweener, isn't he? He's like a big man up front who actually drops deep, which is kind of unusual nowadays.
He would play as a two up front with Sheffield United.
Then
he's very good. Like, fair play to him getting the two goals the other day, because I think not just Irish fans, but I think every football fan was happy for him because you can see the effort he puts in. But again, Sheffield United are a great side, but he still has to do so much effort that it actually kind of costs him in front of goal because he's so tired. Yeah. When he does get in front of goal, I don't think people realise that. Like, the best finishers in the world are probably the ones that work less and less. I think, I know Aguero is unbelievable striker, don't get me wrong. But I would consider him a better finisher a couple of years ago when Guardiola didn't demand as much work rate out of him.
Yeah.
That kind of way. He was definitely, I know his age, but he was definitely that bit sharper, where when Guardiola started saying he has to do a bit more, I think he'd miss more chances. He still scores every week, but he'd miss one or two more where you go, the old Aguero would score that. And it's about finding that balance. Do you want a striker who's going to walk and then get tired in front of goal, or do you want a fella who is just going to laze about and then it's 22. But like, for me, it's a no-brainer. Centre back is just a lot easier. Like, it's enjoyable. Like, and I think, like, in especially in our league, it's all about you win your headers and stuff. Like, if you can play ball, that's an added bonus, and you probably might even get out of this country if you can do the basics right and then actually be a good ball player on top of that. Then you do see centre backs go from this country.
Well, that's something you mentioned before. I think that it was difficult when you were going to attract attention as a centre back than a centre forward. Like, so I mean, when you got a move off the back of scoring what 24 or 25 goals probably.
Mm.
Whereas it would be harder to kind of get that move maybe then if you were a centre-back playing pretty well every week kind of thing.
I think back then the league obviously didn't get as much recognition as it kind of would now for exporting players. I mean, I was very fortunate as well. I was a first division player who managed to somehow sneak a move. And I don't know, like, it just worked that way. But now that the league is getting more like recognition, it's been seen more. I think that's because of what Dundalk done in Europe. I think Rovers obviously went into the group stages as well, and people kind of saw that as a once-off. But then Dundalk done so well that people started recognising the league more. And you see more and more kind of centre-half stand to leave. You Kevin Long, like my old teammates, Sean McLaughlin, Conor McCarthy.
Yeah.
And they've done really well for themselves, and managers kind of see the problem is as well. Like, I think sometimes League of Ireland clubs overrate their players and like over like the price of them. I mean, I wasn't worth €100,000, no chance. Like a first division player, if you went down any first division club now and said I'll give you €100,000 for a player, they'd probably say take €100,000 for the whole squad. You know, that kind of way. Like,
yeah.
And I think. That's why it's so hard. Like, clubs in England aren't going to pay fortunes for centre-backs. Because what people don't realise in Ireland is, yeah, they're good players here, but England, the likes of, like, championship clubs, they've got another 6 or 7 lads like that in their academy youth setups. And I've seen it when I went over, and I'm like, they're not going to spend 300,000-400,000 on a centre-half. And they go, well, we have this guy, and he's not that far off that lad that we're thinking of signing from League of Ireland, and we're not going to waste our money like that kind of way. So I think it's a case of as well, it's bad to say, but like, lads in this league might have to be brave, especially with the way the world's gone now, that English clubs aren't going to be paying fees like lower leagues. No chance. That lads are going to have to be brave and not sign contracts with clubs if they want to get that move to England. And it'll have to be free transfers. I think it'll be very rare now you see an English club come in for a League of Ireland player and spent 200,000 or 300,000. Like, there might have been some moves this summer, centre halves, and you never know. Someone in this league might have done kind of like, mightn't have got paid by their club for a few weeks and might want out, and you might see some centre halves or some players not return League of Ireland. You go, well, he's going to England straight away. He's didn't return training, because I kind of knew that's what happened in my situation with Waterford. I'd not been paid by them, so after 4 weeks you're actually entitled that your contract isn't valid anymore. So by not going in the first day training when we returned, I kind of had something in mind that I might be Cork might be interested. We hadn't, and no terms had we agreed on anything. I just knew there was interest and I needed to speak to him again. So in fairness, Waterford were good that way, and I, bad as it sounded, I just refused. Well, not refused. I said I wasn't coming in training because for a couple of days, I need a few days to sort this out, because I didn't want to activate my contract and then making it a hassle. And I don't know other lads like that. I don't know if other clubs are back, but that might be a case if you do see a player leave your club. Like, if there's any League of Ireland fans listening to this, it's not, I don't think it's the player's fault that he's leaving on a free. At the end of the day, the club didn't pay him a couple of weeks' wages. His situation, he had to look after himself, and he's probably at his agent tell him refuse to go back and send in a letter saying cancel their contract. So that might happen as well, which could be something interesting in the league when people are giving out. But listen, like I said, players need to look after themselves as well. And if the club couldn't afford to pay him during a certain time, when a player can't afford to wait around in the club.
Yeah. Anyway, about Cork for the rest of the season, what would you say? I mean, you're fondly regarded there for your exploits
two
previous times. Certainly the first time, Graham.
And do you know what? Like, I think I get harshly treated. Like sorry, not to interrupt you, but like the second time, I think I scored 14 goals my first season and I got 10, 11 assists, but I still got absolutely slated. And again, that's a centre forward for you because
there
you go. I didn't get 20 goals, 22 goals. And of course, I was replacing Sean Maguire. That's like replacing like a Ferrari with a Ford. You know what I mean? There's no comparison. Like, it's not, you know, you're going to be disappointed. Like, you know, get used to it. And I think that was just in like, that probably was my downfall as well, that people kept asking me questions. And I think to even ask me that question, like, oh, you here to replace Sean Maguire, was, I think, a person who wouldn't know football asking someone that kind of a question. I honestly do, because it's just so chalk and cheese. But one person, no offence to Cork, like, but, like, Sean's gone on, he's gone to Ireland, everything. Roy was coming back, like, people don't go to England because they're going backwards, and people don't come back from England because they're going forwards. So unless they're really young. So like, I think at that stage, but hopefully it's different this time. Third time lucky, like I said, I did definitely have a good first spell, and I still ended up the club's top scorer last year, which is insane, like in the league. Yeah. 5 goals and I played about 12 games, I'd say. So I don't know. Hopefully this will go better anyway.
And in terms of I suppose the fans would be probably worried about the lack of experience in the position going into the relegation for battle, I suppose. Mm-hmm. What would you say to those concerns?
I think I was only saying, I don't think there's just Cork are concerned or just Sligo. I think anyone has to be concerned in this league. It's so crazy with just 13, 14 games left that if a team doesn't win their first 3 or 4, then they're looking over their shoulder straight away.
Yeah.
No matter who you are. I mean, as I said, we played Bowes first game. You know, Bowes at the moment just saying they're third in the league, they're going for Europe. They'll be going for Europe this year. But if we beat them, you all of a sudden go, we're only 3 points behind Bowes, lads. What's going on here? You know, that kind of way. So for me, I think definitely, like, I know that Cork team is very young. It's a totally different dressing room to what I went into. And then again, as an older player, I never thought of it. Like, when you're younger, you look up to older players and you just go, oh, whatever. I never thought I'd be one of these players that would come in and actually voice my opinion and, like, try and help younger lads. But I saw kind of more this year going down to Waterford. I definitely felt that, and I definitely felt lads were listening to me. I think for an experienced player, it's important you do come into a young side. And again, I think when I spoke to Neil Finn, that was what I said to him. I said, I will be a different character as a centre-back to a striker in around the training room, in around the dressing room. I feel more like a leader as a centre-back. And like I said, I never thought it would be like that, but I definitely enjoy it a lot going in. But again, you want a bit of reciprocant again. Like, you want to be appreciated. Like, you want lads to actually be listened to, taken on board. Otherwise, you get frustrated and you stop doing it. Where, like I said, I just hope that, like, I can bring something extra this time as well.
And how has it been just back training? It's obviously a bit different. You're having to do all your showering at home and all that kind of stuff. How are the protocols working in there?
You know what? I thought it would be a lot stranger. It's not, obviously, the showering thing is big for me anyway. I think that was a big thing with Waterford as well. I was thinking in my head, what if I'm training and I get absolutely soaked in training here and I have to drive home an hour and 40 minutes in wet gear? Like, I was like, I might actually get sick here. Like, not through COVID disease, but just actually getting wet and getting the flu. But it's like, you know, the hand sanitizers are there. And I think, lads, you really, like, you don't need heroes at this time of the year. You know, if someone has a symptom or something like that, you'd expect them to speak up. I think the responsibility is more on players now. Management can do what they can. They can make sure everything's clean and all that. But it's definitely on players like responsibility. I think I'd be very wary if I was in training and I heard a guy sneeze a couple of times, especially with a family, I'd be actually, what you would say, ratting someone out, going to the manager. I've seen him a few times there. This is a bit dodgy, like.
Yeah.
But it's like I said, I think when the games come back, then that's when it might get a bit stranger. I was only saying, like, we don't know how the next lockdown phase will start or how travelling will go. Will there be more spectators allowed in? I kind of hope so. And then even at that, if there is only limited to 500, like, what fans get to go in as well is going to be a big talking point, because, I mean, I know Cork City have a lot more than 400 or 500 season tickets sold, so that's another problem again for the league, like, there's clubs like that, so that'll be interesting, I think, when that, like I said, there's like, sometimes as well, there's a fair me wondering, will this league actually finish again, and do we go into lockdown again? And let's be honest, like, if the league goes into lockdown again, it ain't finishing again, because it took so long to get to this stage that they couldn't go through. They couldn't go through that process again. And mentally, for players, I don't think players go through it mentally again. You're better off just, if it is a case of the season's ended within a couple of weeks, if it's, things aren't going well, then you're better off just calling it off and not going again till the next year.
Grant, listen, we'll leave it there. In terms of the buzz is slightly back with you anyway, Graham, I think, is this? You mentioned in a couple of columns lately that you, with the Echo, that you're enjoying your football a little bit more, even though you weren't playing as much as you wanted at Waterford. Perhaps the whole idea that you're coming closer to the end, like, and that it's a bit easier to enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah, it is. Like, if you want to play something, like I said, the last couple of years, you may as well enjoy it. Like, I went to Rovers, I didn't like it. And like you say, I had an offer of a lot more money to play as a striker, and it wasn't something that I wanted to do, and it meant to leave my family and things. And like you said, when I have a daughter now, to think about that's my number one priority in life, and I want to come home happy to her, not coming home from training and annoyed again that I've had another bad session or a match and I've just got abuse and I'm back to goal and not liking it. No, so definitely, like, football is about, like I said, it's very harsh on young lads nowadays. I don't think they are allowed to enjoy it. I think it's so much pressurised. But you gotta remember where you do it in the first day. You do it to enjoy. You don't do it for the money. Like, it's fantastic if you can earn a living out of it. But look, if you don't enjoy what you're doing either, is it worth doing, really? Like,
That's great, Graham. And don't forget to tune into the Footballer's Life podcast with Graham. There's some lovely interviews there with likes of Steve McPhail, Joey O'Brien, George O'Callaghan. Who else have you done? Hendo as well.
Stephen Henderson, and yours truly as well, another one.
You gave us some
need a good sleep, like.
Some secrets of life at Preston in particular was quite entertaining, if I recall. Yeah, so, yeah, tune into those. We'll link them to this podcast at the end. Brilliant. Listen, thanks for listening, and thanks, Graham.
Thanks very much.